Tell us a little bit about Nordic policies and how they differ to that of other Western democracies.
Yeah, well, the real justification or the idea behind the book and behind the Australia Institute's Nordic Policy Centre is really that Australia tends to look to the USA, the UK, sometimes New Zealand for policy ideas and places to compare ourselves to. And when you look at the way the US and the UK in particular have fared in terms of things like equality, climate policy, prison reform, a whole range of areas of policy interest, to be frank, they haven't done very well. And so we thought it's about time Australia started looking to countries that have been doing really well for a long time. And so the Nordic countries are clearly ahead of the rest of the world on most measures of well-being, happiness, health and equality. So that's the point of the book. And a lot of it goes into a fair bit of nitty-gritty on the details of how Nordic countries have approached these different policy areas, mm-hmm. rather than just the impression that I think a lot of people do have, that Nordic countries have high taxes and decent welfare standards. I think that understanding is generally out there, but this book and the Nordic Policy Centre more generally are about going into a bit more detail and what Australia can learn from those experiences.
Sure. To that point then, whether it's climate change, tax systems, media, which policies would you suggest the maybe priorities for Australia?
Look, I think, maybe this is in line with my background as an economist and the Australia Institute's focus on Australia's tax system and the politics around Australia's tax system, I think we really need to be looking at this conception in Australian discussion, epitomised by Tony Abbott's line that you can't tax your way to prosperity. Really? Nordic countries have among the highest tax to GDP ratios, they're high taxing countries, and yet on almost every measure, they're the most prosperous countries on earth. So I think it's about time we started questioning the role of tax in society and that came through a little bit more subtly in Australia. So the book has a great chapter written by Richard Dennis and Matt Grudnoff from the Australia Institute, looking at international comparisons of tax rates and measures of well-being, which might not sound like a racy read, but it really does provide some really interesting examples of how there's basically nowhere in the world that has lower taxes than Australia, that has higher well-being than Australia, and the opposite is true. Mainly the Nordic countries, there are places that have higher taxes and higher well-being. So, I'd like to see Australia's tax debate influenced more strongly by the lived experience of Nordic countries rather than the back of the envelope calculations of generally discredited political and economic advisors.
Gotcha. Why is it so hard, do you think, for progressive policy to, manifest or at least be reflected in kind of elections and stuff in Australia? I guess as far as, the economy is concerned and jobs, like we can look to Queensland in the last federal election, natural resources, even Western Australia in similar to that. But is there something just innately different in constituents, in older generations, in their kind of understandings or opinions on things? What is there some disparity there between Australians and then our Nordic counterparts?
In terms of why is it hard to get these issues discussed more positively and with a more sort of factual and data-based approach, I think you've almost answered your own question. Your immediate response is to look at different Australian states, and as we discussed a second ago, our next response is usually to look to the US and the UK.
Sure.
The Australia Institute's executive director Ben Oakquist is very fond of saying the only thing more powerful than an idea whose time has come is an idea that's already there. And these ideas are already there. You know, there are really great progressive policies being enacted and developed and lived with in these countries, and it's about time we started having a look at them. And so, you know, there's you know, you mentioned resources. We've got a great chapter on Norway and how it's managed its oil industry. Again, that's something that I think a lot of people who are interested in politics, policy, and international affairs, you know, are generally aware that Norway has managed its oil wealth well. But our chapter goes into some really great detail on not only how big is Norway's sovereign wealth fund and how it achieved that, but what it does with it. So Norway's managed to turn its mineral wealth into a massive sovereign wealth fund that isn't just managed by political appointees and cronies like Australia's Future Fund, managed by Peter Costello. There's real transparency and democracy and expert advice around the way Norway's sovereign wealth fund invests and the way it behaves as an investor, the way it votes on different shareholder motions and shareholder resolutions that have made it, you know, such a powerful influence. That enables Norway, a relatively small country, to project a huge amount of influence and power internationally. And it's something Australia can absolutely learn from, because our future fund and our general approach to resource taxation doesn't give us anywhere near that level of influence. So, there's a lot to unpack in there.
Is the book going to be relatively easily digestible and approachable for the everyday Australian, maybe someone that's not tapped into politics and policy in this, or is there going to be a little bit of jargon in there that someone might find slightly difficult?
Yeah, no, look, it is aimed at a general audience. You said at the start that it's written by me and Andrew Scott. That's not quite right. We've written a couple of chapters, but we're the editors. That's right. There's a range of authors in there. Some of them are very much academics, but we've also got a chapter from the former Swedish foreign minister, Margot Wallström, who was responsible for implementing Sweden's feminist foreign policy and really increasing the representation of women when Sweden had a seat at the UN Security Council. You know, that's written by a politician. So all of that's absolutely designed to be understood by the general reader, although there are a few academic concepts definitely explored, but definitely aimed at the general public and in all good bookstores and available on the Melbourne Uni Publishing website.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Rod. I do appreciate your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Have a good day.